Education Finance Committee will come to order. We've got a number of bills, and we have kept, unfortunately, Representative Dean, Chair of the Health and Human Services Finance Committee, waiting as we're trying to achieve a quorum. But I'm going to go ahead and get started and let Representative Dean talk about his bill so we can hopefully get him on his way before too long. And my apologies to you, Chair Dean.
We have a quorum.
Oh, we do have a quorum. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and make the motion on your bill. And we're very pleased to have you here before the Education Finance Committee. I would move that House File 3062 be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance. And with that, the bill's before us formally. Welcome so much, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 3062 is a bill dealing with opioid education and awareness. This bill was brought to us by students of Shakopee through Representative Lunan. And what this bill does is it's a bill that seeks grant money and appropriates that to for opioid awareness for high school students and undergraduate students in post-secondary schools. One of the grantees is to be Native from the Native American community. The bill is budget neutral, and it asks that these funds that are used for this be within existing grants, federal or grants that are state. And it also directs the DHS to administer this and also to report back to the legislature by September 1st of 2019 on the status. This would be for opioid awareness and for work within the schools, and also on the dangers of opioid addiction, and also on programs such as take-back programs and disposal programs that students might want to be aware of and also be able to educate their families on. So that, in the bill, is a nutshell, no fiscal cost, and it seeks existing seeks existing money, high school students, post-secondary students, and within that time frame of the year. So with that, Madam Chair and members, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you very much, Chairman Dean. Appreciate it. Any questions for Chairman Dean at this time? Representative Erickson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Dean, is the federal dollars that you're thinking about, that 18 or 19 million that we expect to receive or would receive or did receive, and would there be a follow-up to it? Do you know anything about that, the federal dollars?
Chairman Dean.
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, we do have several allocations from the federal government that are tracked for opioid awareness and addiction, and the specific number, the $16 million, is something that I have seen and I have not actually received from the department an actual attribution of where that money is being spent, but I think that we have requested that, and that's forthcoming.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Dean. All right. Do you have any other testifiers, Representative Dean, or is there anyone from the public who wishes to comment on House File 3062? All right. Not seeing any. Okay. Not seeing any. I want to thank you for bringing the bill forward. I think it's a great idea. I don't know how many of our young people are falling victim to opioid addiction, but I think it's important, obviously, that we provide education as early as possible to the potential dangers and help safeguard our children. So I want to thank you very much for bringing this forward.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. It is the leading cause of death under 50. It is the leading cause of accidental death and the crisis in our state, as we all have heard and are finding out, in particularly in the Native American community. It's five times higher, not 5% higher, but five times higher than the rest of the state. And also, we heard testimony in committee that for mothers, pregnant mothers, it is 10 times higher in the Native American community than at the state at large. So something that if we can get students aware of earlier, that will certainly help, and they can also help to educate their parents and siblings at home. So it's one little thing that we can be doing on some upstream work on this issue. So thank you. Thank the committee. Appreciate your support.
All right. Thank you very much, Chairman Dean. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 3062 be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance. All right.
I'm sorry.
I should say all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Got ahead of myself. Thank you very much, Chair Dean. Sorry about the delay. Get you on your way. All right. So we do have a quorum to achieve right before we start a business. Representative Sandstead, would you like to move the minutes?
I will go ahead and move the minutes.
All right. Representative Sandstead moves approval of the minutes from March 8th, 2018. Any questions, comments? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Minutes are approved. Thank you very much, Representative Sandstead. All right. Next. Do you want to take the chair?
Sure.
No.
And while Representative Loon is taking the stand, her motion will be to move House File 385 to Ways and Means with the intent to lay the bill over.
Yes, that is my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loon, to your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 3085 has to do with a bill that I authored and was part of our omnibus education finance bill last session. As you may recall, there was a grant program funded in that bill that provides $2.45 million per year to the Department of Human Services, and this is for fiscal years 18 and 19, that give grants to mental health providers to deliver innovative mental health services to students in a federal instructional level 4 or higher special education program that is operated by an intermediate school or a service cooperative. And under the legislation, eligible providers had to meet certain qualifications in order to apply for the grant. What House File 3085 does is adds one additional eligible qualification to those criteria, and that addition is that a mental health provider that is enrolled as a mental health or substance use disorder provider in Minnesota's medical assistance program and that employs at least two full-time equivalent mental health professionals would be eligible for the grant. And so the reason for doing this is Intermediate 287, and you will hear from Superintendent Lewandowski here just shortly about this, wanted to enter into a partnership but found that the partners that they had discussed these services with did not meet those criteria. I think there was a lot of working with Department of Human Services about this, and it just was eventually decided we needed to do what I'm considering more of a technical correction to make this grant work out as intended. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll leave my comments there and would invite Representative or Superintendent Lewandowski to offer her comments.
Thank you. And Superintendent Lewandowski, please state your name for the record and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Sandra Lewandowski, and I'm the superintendent of Intermediate District 287, and we are indeed most grateful for the approval of legislation last year allocating resources for innovative mental health grants. In my district, we have plans to dedicate close to $2 million over 2 years toward embedding a racially conscious trauma-informed mental health model with our youngest students who have emotional and behavioral disorders, and it will be called a therapeutic teaching model. However, when we were planning for the submission of our proposal, we also had hoped to enter a partnership with Prairie Care Hospital. I'm sure many of you have heard of Prairie Care. They're licensed and regulated as a hospital for pediatric mental health patients. They have more pediatric psychiatrists than anyone in the state. Yet because they are licensed as a hospital and not in the categories originally stipulated in the bill language last year, this technical change would allow future partnerships with providers such as themselves to be a possibility. It basically just widens the possible provider list to customize for intermediates a match for what we want to do. So indeed this would seem to be a technical change, and I certainly hope that you would support it, and happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for your testimony. And any questions? Anybody from the public who wants to speak on the bill? I think being the author of the bill and the chair on the committee helps a lot. So with that, closing comments from Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Again, I think this is just a technical correction to make the bill work as intended. I think it was unintentional that somehow the parts didn't all work perfectly together, so this will make it do so, and I would appreciate your support.
And with that, the chair renews her motion to lay over House File 385 for possible inclusion or further action at a later date.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And next, while Chair Luna is coming up, we'll have nonpartisan staff present.
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, members, there's a couple of bills on the agenda dealing with two formula items. And staff have prepared for you an explanation of each of the two programs being amended and included a printout showing the effects of both of these proposals. The first in your packet is entitled Extended Time Revenue, and we had a bit of a discussion about this the other day as well with the CTE programs. And a different bill will be in front of us today. Extended time revenues available for state-approved alternative programs, and those programs most commonly are delivered through an area learning center. So most of the members of this committee are familiar with the area learning center programming in those districts. There's a couple of keys to this. A state alternative program can only, approved alternative program can only be offered through one of the approved providers, and a student must choose to voluntarily enroll in a program in order for it to meet the state definitions. The ALCs are essentially cooperative groups of districts. There's an exception in statute that allows first-class cities to run their own ALCs, but otherwise all of your districts there are individually a member of a joint ALC. An area learning program is a separate type of arrangement. A student who's at risk and participating in an area learning program may also qualify for funding through the extended time formula. In general, what happened to set the large context for you, in 1987, funding for summer school was eliminated as a categorical item. But school districts realized not long thereafter that the Learning Year program, which existed really for a different reason, could be leveraged to count a student as more than one full-time student during the year. And more school districts began doing this during the 1990s. And at the end of the 1990s, essentially the state decided to cap the total enrollment that any one student could generate, first at 2.0 FTE students and then at 1.5, and then a couple of years later in the early 2000s created the extended time revenue formula, limited all pupils except those participating in a state-approved alternative program to 1.0 in terms of their FTE status. And so the extended time revenue is a statutory set amount of $5,117 per pupil, and that can be multiplied by the hours of service that each student has in an approved state alternative approved program. The maximum hours that a student can receive are 0.2, so roughly speaking, a little over 200 hours for secondary students. The programs can be an extended day, an extended week, or an extended school year through summer school style of program. Most of the pupils that generate extended time revenue are in a summer program of one sort or another. The expenditures for the extended time program can be used for a variety of academic activities. In general, these are remedial activities, not enrichment activities. And finally, Madam Chair, on extended time, there's a printout showing how this funding works. If you turn to the printout-oriented portrait style on the paper, you'll see that for the 2018-2019 school year, there was $60.5 million of extended time revenue, and the printout shows how that's distributed amongst school districts in Minnesota. Additionally, to the in addition to the revenue that comes through the extended time formula in Chapter 126C, there's also a set-aside of compensatory aid. And that set-aside was set essentially to correspond to the growth. That was something new that was added last year. And for the 2019 fiscal year, the 2018-2019 school year, school districts are required to set aside 3.5% of their compensatory revenue and use that for the purposes that are otherwise eligible for extended time revenue. And so you can see that that totals about $19.6 million, and you can see the amount reserved by each district in the right-hand column for those purposes, and the ones with a higher amount per pupil are those districts that are getting a higher level of compensatory. One final word to add, in terms of charter schools, a provision was passed several years ago authorizing charter schools to qualify for extended time programming and set the funding equal to 25% of the school district per pupil average of extended time revenue. And that goes to the charter schools that offer an extended time program. So, Madam Chair, that's a quick discussion of the extended time revenue program.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Strom. Any questions for Nonpartisan? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, would you remind us what the meaning is of extended time pupil units in the second column after the adjusted pupil units versus the extended time pupil?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, so the first number is our general, the adjusted pupil units is our general funding definition of pupils. So those 953,000 are weighted by grade level, and that's the total of all the pupils enrolled in our public school system. The extended time pupil units is the hours of time for each student counted up to 0.2 for that student all added together. So in on the first page of the list there on Minneapolis, for example, you can see there's 1,815 extended time pupil units with a maximum of 0.2 for each one. That means that there's at least five times that many students taking extended time programming. If the average student's taking 0.1 pupil units of time, then there'd be 18,000 extended time pupil units in Minneapolis. More likely, the majority of students that are taking extended time are earning relatively close to the full 0.2. So one could assume about 9,000 students participating and being funded for extended time activities in the Minneapolis district. The extended time revenue is the formula allowance, the 5,117 times that column. And then the next column to the right is taking that $60 million and dividing it by the very first column so that it's comparable to formula allowance money or other money to give a rough sense of how much additional money that is for the school district.
Thank you. That was very good.
Other questions?
Madam Chair, there's a second printout then that's oriented portrait style or landscape style on the long paper, and this is to show you the effects of our English learner revenue program. Minnesota's had a English learning portion of the formula for 30-plus years, close to 40 years now. There are two parts to this formula. The formula provides a basic level of $704 times each eligible EL student, each English learner student. And then there's a concentration revenue equal to $250 times the ratio of the district's EL students to 11.5%. What that means is districts serving more than 11.5% EL students would receive the full $250, and any district serving less than 11.5% would receive a proportionate amount based on its percentage to 11.5%. The English learner revenue encourages two types of programs, both English as a second language program and bilingual programs. There's a couple of sections of statute that deal with these program characteristics, and the money in the English learner area has to be spent in accordance with the district's English learner plan. It can be spent on the delivery of services, and it can also be spent on professional development and other staff development activities. If you turn to the printout, you'll see, again, that same 953,000 students, the total funding pupil count in the very first column. And then I think I'm missing a column here. The second column should show you 73,000 pupil units. I think I hit the wrong one on the spreadsheet this morning. There's 73,000 English learner pupils, and I'll reprint this in just a minute and send it down to us. And you can see that percentage then is expressed by dividing the column that actually showed by mistake the 856,000 ADM. If you divide the English learner count by that number, you'll get the percentage that shows in the third column. So, for example, the South St. Paul School District Number 6, 4.9% of its students are eligible English learner students. In Columbia Heights, a few more districts down, 23.6% of the students qualify for English learner revenue. You can see then that the concentration, the next group of columns shows the baseline level of revenue. And for that concentration index, we take the percent English learner in that third column, divide it by 11.5%. So for a district like Columbia Heights, they're greater than 11.5%, so they'll receive 100% of the concentration. A district like South St. Paul, dividing the 4.9% by the 11.5, yields a concentration of 42%. So the basic English learner revenue then is in the next column, and you'll see that that's the $704 times their EL pupil count. And in South St. Paul, for example, that raises $119,000. In Anoka Hennepin, $1.1 million. And then the concentration revenue is the $250 times the percentage in the first column of this group of columns, the concentration revenue column. And adding those two together then gives the current amount of EL revenue by school district, which is about $57.3 million. English learner revenues distributed fairly unequally among school districts because the number of non-English speakers or English learner students is distributed rather unequally amongst the districts as well. The next several columns, I'm not sure if you'd prefer me to talk about those now or when the bill comes up, but the next several columns show those same calculations under House File 3180. And you can see there that this would increase the revenue by about $7.8 million, and it does so by increasing the amount that's subject to the concentration revenue and then increasing the maximum percentage there. So basically, if your percentage is below 11.5% English learners, there's no new revenue for you. If you're above that, you're going to get a scaled amount of new revenue up to an additional $250 per English learner. Totaling, as I said, $7.8 million, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Strom. Any questions for Mr. Strom? I thought it might be helpful just to have an overview of the program before we hear from Representative Mariani on his bill. All right. Not seeing any. And you've gone through all your materials,
yes,
right? Okay.
Thank you,
very
Madam
good.
Chair.
So with that, I think Representative Mariani, if you want to go ahead and move to the testifier table. Right, and I know you have a superintendent who wanted to testify, and he's tied up in another meeting, so I think what we may have you do is have you start with House File 3166, the extended time revenue for summer programs for students placed at corrections facilities. We'll start with that one, if that's all right.
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay.
My motion then would be?
To be re-referred to Ways and Means with the Chair's intention to lay over for possible inclusion or further action at a later date.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would so move.
All right. And Representative Mariani makes that motion. And then you do have an amendment, the A1 amendment to this bill. So why don't we go ahead and move that to get the bill in the shape the author would like.
Madam Chair, I would so move. And this amendment is probably going to need a little bit more work as we've gotten some more information from the department, but we've been working with them on that. But at this point, yes, I would so move the A1 amendment.
All right. So Representative Mariani moves the H3166A1 amendment. All members should have a copy in your packets. All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. So the A1 amendment is adopted, and the bill is in the shape that the author would like. And please go ahead and tell us about your bill, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill expands on a bill that the Wilmer School District brought to us to this committee last year to fund their summer program for students who are placed in the Lakes Education Center or the Lake Park School by Juvenile Services. School districts are required to provide both regular and special ed services year-round for students who are placed in these facilities. They generate regular and special ed for the regular school year. But even though our statutes specify that reimbursement is in accordance with both special ed and general ed law, there is no authority for reimbursement for summer students, summer school as students are placed in the program and it isn't voluntary. So what this bill does is that allows all school districts across the state that are serving juveniles the authority to claim extended time revenue for these students. So to explain this in a much better way than I can or have, we have the principal of our boys' totem town, Mr. Daniel Wolf, who will talk about the program within Ramsey County. And then we also, I think she might be here, Tammy Barnes from the Wilmer School Board, who's also asked to say a few words about this as well. So, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Mariani. And was it Wolf?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Wolf. All right. Welcome. If you please to say your name so we have that on the record, and please provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dan Wolf. I am a principal with St. Paul Public Schools. I'm the principal supervising Boys Totem Town, the Juvenile Detention Center, and a school called Journeys, which is a program offering services to special education students. So here today talking primarily about Boys Totem Town and the Juvenile Detention Center. I've been asked just to give a quick description of what the programs are and what services they offer. And I'll start with Boys Totem Town, which is currently serving roughly 20 students, all male, ages 9th grade to 12th grade. Both general education students and special education students. The juvenile detention center is slightly different because of the nature of the program. There's typically any range between 15 and 40 students there, and that's pretty consistent throughout the summer or the traditional school year. There are no girls at Boys Totem Town, but it is boys and girls at the juvenile detention center, and that is a 6th grade through 12th grade program. So a little description about what happens there. It is about 50% general education students and 50% students receiving special education services. Not many, but there are quite a few during the year students that are not Ramsey County students that are from outside the district. In a nutshell, we're trying to mirror services that are offered to all students during the school year, trying to provide 5 days a week, 4 week session, 6 hours a day. We currently have teachers that are all licensed in special education because of the requirements of such. There are, we do provide credit recovery programs like APEX there. We also have connections to organizations like Gateway to College. Students have access to things like that. They have social workers, counselors. And I guess, you know, to sum it up, the issue is the lack of a funding stream to pay for the services during the summer.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Wolf. We appreciate you being here. And Ms. Barnes, did you want to offer some testimony?
Yes, my name is Tammy Barnes. I'm a Willmar School Board member, and we thank you for the money that Carlos was able to get us last year. I visited the school this fall, and the teachers are they're loving the program because the students are there. They are doing what they need to be doing, and for the students, it's a great opportunity. Otherwise, they'd be sitting in lockup. They're getting the education so that hopefully when they're out, they can become a successful member of our community or our state. So appreciate it, and I think it's an awesome system that needs to be further funded.
Thank you very much, Ms. Barnes. Representative Mariani, did you have other testifiers?
I don't, Madam Chair, no. And I do want to, again, go back to our amendment. You know, the intent is to have this be available throughout the state. We thought we had drafted the initial language to do that, and we thought the amendment would fix whatever we missed, but apparently we're still not quite there. But I don't want to confuse the committee about what our intent is.
All right, thank you. We appreciate that clarification, and obviously as we're going to lay it over today, so if there's further changes that need to be made once we get down the road to working on an omnibus bill, we'll be happy to work with you. I see a representative from MSBA who may want to offer some comments, so please come on down. Welcome. If you'd please just state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Denise Dietrich with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And we wanted just to come down and lend our support to this bill and actually Representative Bennett's bill as well. In 2017, our delegate assembly passed a resolution dealing with flexibility in extended time revenue, and it actually read that we would urge the legislature to allow Minnesota school districts to have greater flexibility in spending their extended time revenue. So we're very pleased that people are looking at creative ways on how to use that revenue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Dietrich. All right. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify on House File 3166? All right, not seeing any. Any questions for the author or any of the testifiers from the committee? All right, not seeing any. Representative Mariani, any closing comments?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation. Obviously, Representative Bennett, myself, and others are looking at this particular part of our formula to be able to deliver some powerful experiences for our students. And we've already dipped our toe in this in the past, and I like the way that we're doing this very responsibly and very deliberately. I look forward to working with you. Hopefully we'll have some resources when your targets are set for us to consider doing this at this time.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. And I know that, you know, we were able to offer some limited help for one school district, one facility with our budget bill last year, but I think it certainly makes sense to extend this to all similar programs. And so I guess just one question for whoever wants to take this, Mr. Wolf or others, but so for those facilities who aren't currently getting this extended time, are they just not able to offer summer programming or extended time programming at all? Or is it stretching other resources for other purposes?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Can you repeat the question, please?
I said, are you not able to offer summer programming or that because you're not getting this extended time revenue currently? Or how is this impacting, I guess, the services that you're providing for the students in these settings?
Yeah, that was the question last year. And so, yes, we did offer the services last year, but it's a matter of where the funding is coming from.
All right. And Ms. Gilbert, did you want to offer a comment? And would you please just introduce yourself? Thank you.
Mary Gilbert, members of the committee, St. Paul Public Schools. I want you to know that we had difficult conversations with Ramsey County around this issue, and I think that probably districts all across the state are having those same conversations with their county who are placing these kids. And so we think that it's easier to set up transition services if we are responsible for the education part, and then it would free up more of what the county should be traditionally doing, trying to integrate those kids. We could do it jointly back into the schools so that they have a better chance of success.
Great. Thank you. That, I think, clarifies my question. Any other questions or comments from committee members? All right, seeing none, Representative Mariani, would you like to make any final comments on your bill?
Yeah, sure. As I said earlier, I look forward to continuing to work on this to make sure that we're meeting our intent to make it broadly available. And I do understand that whatever decision we need to make will be determined by what happens in our target in the coming weeks or so. Look forward to working with you on it.
All right. Thank you very much. And I look forward to working with you on this as well. And with that, Representative Mariani renews his motion that House File 3166 as amended be referred to Ways and Means, but it is the Chair's intention to lay over for possible inclusion or further action at a later time today. So thank you very much. And okay, all right. So Representative Bennett is not here yet, so we will go ahead and – oh, here she is, Representative Bennett. Yes, if that's all right.
Did you get my message? Ready for you.
All right. I did now.
Thank you.
I apologize, Madam Chair. Representative Bennett. So thank you. Sorry, we were just on the topic of extended time with Representative Mariani's bill, and I thought maybe it would make sense for have you – we'll continue on that topic with your bill. So, and for the committees, just to refresh you, we had an informational hearing on Representative Bennett's bill. We had Remember All the Great the Kids Doing the Welding Program, and it was just wonderful that came and testified last week, but we didn't actually have possession of the bill because it had been heard earlier that day in Education Policy and Innovation. So now we have the bill before us. And so Representative Bennett is moving that House File 3190 be referred to Ways and Means with the Chair's intention today to lay it over for possible inclusion or for further action at a later time. Representative Bennett.
All right. Madam Chair, how much would you like me to go over this bill?
Why don't you just make a few comments just to refresh us on what it is the bill proposes to do. And I think we, you know, remember the great – I certainly remember the kids, and I remember the samplings of their welding and the instructors who were here and how excited they were. But why don't you remind us just sort of what the nuts and bolts of the bill are.
I'm going to do that. Thank you. And I apologize for being late. I've actually been stuck on an elevator for 45 minutes.
Oh, no.
So, and I had no service, so I was trying to text our committee administrator, and it wasn't working. So anyway.
Well, we are glad you have been freed from the elevator.
Perfect timing. The elevator let us loose. We had to crawl down a ladder to get out of there. But
oh, no.
Anyway, it was my excitement for the day. So House File 3190 would allow the schools who are teaching their vocational technical courses, currently they teach it during the school day, but some of them have been trying to be innovative and flexible for their students and teaching these courses outside of the school day. The Fairmont School District actually holds a welding class on Saturday mornings. But they are not funded if they're held outside the school day. This would allow them to be funded inside this or outside the school day. And I love the idea because we could see from hearing from the students that the flexible schedule really helped them to be able to attend these classes, whereas in many cases they couldn't otherwise. I also like the idea because we all know that vocational education courses are incredibly important, as are the regular academic courses, but we need more electricians and welders and carpenters and that type of thing, and this is part of getting these young people interested and getting them skills so that we can get more people into the work field. The other thing I see is a way of hooking kids who, you know, they might be on that borderline of perhaps dropping out of school, or, you know, they're struggling and perhaps going to need to go into some kind of alternative program. And when we offer courses like this for students, it can many times hook those young people in that are not hooked in through reading and math and science, but they love the hands-on. And so one thing I was talking to Adoshuni from the Department of Education, we're talking about the funding, and I know there's some question on should we open up extended time revenue for this. I'm totally flexible if we can find a different way to fund this or perhaps funded as a pilot project for its first time. I do think it's worthwhile for many of these reasons that I mentioned. One thing I mentioned to Mr. Uni is that I think we need to do a better job as schools to try to circumvent problems and struggles for students before they even happen, and to try to hook kids in to staying into school so that they don't drop out and so that they don't need to go into alternative programs, I think is, in a way, to use that extended time money so that hopefully they don't have to get into those programs in the first place. So I do see that this perhaps would fit that in a loose way, that type of funding. So I think I'll just stop there if anybody has any questions or anything.
Thank you very much, Representative Bennett, and we appreciate you refreshing us on the bill and the concept. And I would note that we have asked for a fiscal note on the bill, but we have not yet received it. So that's another reason we're going to, obviously, we're going to have to lay it over and wait for the details of that. So, but I think there are a couple people who wanted to offer testimony on your bill today. Mm-hmm. Ms. Dietrich with MSBA, did you want to come down and talk? I know you mentioned it in your previous testimony.
Madam Chair, I'm wondering if Ms. Dietrich took an elevator down here, too.
No, but I do want to know
you maybe made it.
You took. I'm staying
number
with
four, comment. Stay with us.
We all got the info now. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Denise Dietrich with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And we wanted to come and support this bill because, first of all, is the encouragement of students to take CTE classes outside of the school day and providing more flexibility in the use of extended time activities. We all know that extended time activities do work, and so any time that we can now, especially with new revenue going towards that funding source, any time we can expand the definition of extended time and allow local school districts to have more flexibility in spending their extended time can be a really good thing for students. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Dietrich. Any questions at this point? All right. Mr. Uni, I know you wanted to offer some comments from the department. There he is. Welcome.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosha Uni, Department of Education. I'll make my comments as quick as my approach. I think Representative Bennett pretty much covered our conversation that we had. It was a very productive conversation. It was just in the air of being very careful about expanding the purpose of extended time revenue, which we know is for recovery for students who are behind to get back to their online for their graduation requirements. We saw that several of these students were quite accomplished, had very heavy loads and were quite accomplished students. And we want to make sure that the revenue is used for those students that may be working to get to that level but are behind. So we're open to working with Representative Bennett around alternative approaches for this program. The commissioners, when she heard about the program, she liked the sound of it, but we need to find a source that works for the uses that it's intended for.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Uni. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Uni, what data points do districts submit on extended learning revenue, and for what uses? Does the MARS break it down, or the UFARS, or do you know?
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, members, I am not sure off the top of my head. I'm not sure if Mr. Strom may know. From any of his research, I can certainly look to see if there's any data that we can disaggregate from the UFARS coding.
Thank you, because it would be good to see how districts use their extended time and then what the result is.
I would concur, and Mr. Strom, I don't know if we have anything like that or if it's possible to get that information.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, the UFARS expenditure data will show us by the same categories for extended time, I believe, that we've seen on other printouts, but that doesn't help us in terms of understanding the sort of the functional use of the money. If two-thirds of it, for example, spent on licensed classroom teachers, that's how that will show up, and so it won't provide you a functional analysis of what types of program they're spending their money on.
Madam Chair, just another report, Madam Chair. Mr. Uni loves me to ask for reports.
I said, I can tell he's excited about that idea. So, I know. And we hate to overburden the department or the districts with more information, but honestly, a lot of this helps us make decisions, or at least know what's happening in our districts on topics like this. So, other questions or comments for Mr. Uni or for Representative Bennett? Not seeing any. Thank you, Mr. Uni. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to testify on House File 3190? All right. Not seeing any. Representative Bennett, I thank you again. I'm sorry you were delayed in the elevator. We're glad you are here with us. But, I think watching the committee when the students were here and the instructors, I think there's a great deal of enthusiasm for how innovative this is, getting the students. I mean, they're excited to get up and go to class at 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning to learn how to weld. You know, I would share a little bit the department's concerns about extended time. I've kind of zealously guarded that as well. I know I've had requests to allow extended time to be used during the regular school day as opposed to after school and that, and I've kind of resisted that just to make sure that we're actually giving kids extra time, because I think a lot of research shows that that is what's needed and that does make a difference for struggling students. But I do think you have a really great idea here, so I look forward to working with you to try to find how we might be able to allow some funding or enable programs like this to have the resources to be available to students, because I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, thank you so much for hearing this bill and committee members. And I'm excited because I love to see school districts try to be, as you say, innovative and flexible and trying to meet students' needs in many different ways. Another thing I love about this is I think there's a lot of potential for school districts to collaborate. For example, Bloor students come over to Fairmont for these classes, so I can foresee if we can find some funding for this kind of thing in the future, maybe sharing of resources between districts, which in these areas of the vocational skills can be pretty extensive sometimes with the resources needed. So I'm excited about it. I'm hoping we can at least get a little bit of funding for it to try it out. So thank you.
Very good. Representative Mariani had a question.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologize. I know I'm speaking after you're wrapping up here, and I shouldn't do that. But I've kind of been wrestling with this a little bit in terms of thinking about, actually, under both bills, as we're kind of pushing the boundaries out here. And I do think that regardless of where we want to push the boundaries to, whether it's pushing it out into locations that are outside of the present, as in my bill, outside of the present prescriptions of where, what might be eligible, but nonetheless still meets intentional purpose. In your bill, which is stepping outside of intentional purpose, but is looking, to add some additional value added, for students that otherwise they're not going to be able to have access to. It seems to me that one of the things as we wrestle with it, I think it's an honest wrestling, is to also think carefully about whether any of that, whether it's my bill or Representative Bennett's bill or anyone else's bill, opens up a floodgate of demand and need, which may, without our intent, may wind up potentially watering down our ability to invest in that original purpose. So I suspect by your nodding, Madam Chair, you're kind of wrestling with that thought as well. So I just want to, just name it. If it means we still value it, then maybe it means that we find more resources to put into it. And I just want us to be open about that as well.
Yeah, thank you, Mariani. And Representative Mariani, I think you've captured very much kind of my thoughts on it, too. I think it's a great idea. I'm not sure that it fits under what I believe the purpose of extended time is. And, again, I think, I'm so committed to trying to make sure that those extra resources that we give to districts to help students who are struggling, who need that extra time, is really reserved for that purpose. But I think what you've presented, Representative Bennett, is just a great idea that we'd like to see schools do. So how could we try to make that happen, whether it's fits under extended time or not? I'm not sure yet. But with that, again, it's just a great innovative idea that I think is very worthy of the committee's consideration. So I appreciate you bringing that to us. All right. Any other comments or questions for Representative Bennett? If not, she renews her motion that House File 3190 be referred to Ways and Means with the chair's intention today to lay it over for possible inclusion or further action at a later time. Thank you very much, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right, and you are back up, Representative Mariani.
Chair, I was commenting that I was so confident I was going to be able to get back to the witness stand that I left my water here.
Oh.
I'll try not to leave it next time. Okay.
All right, and no one drank it, so you're still there.
Madam Chair, I believe the motion would be to recommend House File 3180 to be passed and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with the possible inclusion?
Yes, that is correct. Representative Mariani?
I would so move, Madam Chair.
Chair's intent to lay over. And very good. So House File 3180 is before us, and you did not have an amendment to that bill. Okay, very good.
Yeah.
All right, and so we are now switching topics from extended time to English learner funding. And please offer your testimony or present your bill, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've been told that the St. Paul School Superintendent, Joe Goddard, wishes to testify, but as you noted earlier, he's in another committee. Hopefully he'll get here before we're done. But we do have some other testifiers as well. And thank you, Mrs. John, for running through both of those formulas for us. So many of you have heard about the EL cross-subsidy. We've heard about special ed cross-subsidy, but many school districts feel that there's also some cross-subsidy work that's happening in regards to EL students as they make the strong commitment to ensure that that they're providing a quality educational outcome to meet state standards for those students. This bill speaks to the concentration part of that formula, which hasn't been changed for quite a while. And it would scale it up to $500 as the concentration goes to 23%. So if your concentration is at 25%, you would get the new max of the $500 per EL students instead of the current $250. So it would still follow the same format that Mr. Strom identified earlier, but sets that pegs at a higher rate. Frankly, I wish we could do more. We've got, if not the fastest, one of the fastest growing student demographic groups in the state and in our public schools. And that's probably true across the nation as well, as there's this big demographic change that's happening in the United States that's kind of making us look like perhaps we looked like 100 years ago, including this state in terms of the migration-immigration patterns and growth of certain communities within the United States. You know, members, I was born in Grand Rapids, Michigan. My parents are from the island of Puerto Rico. They came in the 1950s. And I was born in Grand Rapids, was raised in parts of Michigan, Indiana. By the time I went to school in Chicago, I did not speak English. We had English television, you know, obviously radio. I heard it, but I didn't speak it. I was the first born in my family. So this is an issue not just of migration and immigration. It's also an issue of the next generation of children from many of those communities. So the challenge and the opportunity are very present for us in our nation. My school district of St. Paul has the largest number of EL students in the state. But as you look at the table that Mrs. Strom shared. That's a pretty shared reality across the state. Certainly not in every district, but it is a feature of public education. In exurban, greater Minnesota, regional centers, as well as in the urban core. In St. Paul, if we counted just our EL students in the district of St. Paul, that alone would make us the eighth largest school district in the state. So you can see why we're particularly focused on this issue. But I can guarantee you from my interaction with small school districts in greater Minnesota, where the numbers may not be that big, the percentages certainly are. And so in many ways, providing public education in greater Minnesota arguably is providing education with a EL reality and EL competency. We have, Madam Chair, I'm going to stop there. We have a few testifiers. We have Kelly Frankenfeld, who's Director of EL and Cultural Programs for St. Paul Area Schools. And I believe school board member from Wilmer, Tammy Barnes, is still here, which is also a large EL district. And I think you wanted to also say a few words as well. So, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Mariani. We appreciate that explanation. And, we have talked about this a little bit. And, I do think that this is a topic that the committee needs to spend some time discussing and exploring, because many of our schools are having greater numbers of students that are English language learners, and the resources provided is, it's often stretched, and as you said, a cross subsidy, and for districts to meet the needs of those students. So, all right. And you, is it Frankenfeld? Did I get that correct? All right, welcome. And if you please just introduce yourself for the record.
I am Kelly Frankenfeld. I am the Director of English Learner and Cultural Programs for St. Cloud Area Schools. And I just want to point out that the Executive Director of English Learner Multicultural Learning is also here from St. Paul. I have just a short PowerPoint with some of our data, and I don't have very many copies, but I'll just...
Every other.
Just a summary of some of our data that's pertaining to English learners. So English learners are the fastest growing students in St. Cloud area schools, similar to St. Paul. According to the Minnesota Department of Education English Learner Report in 2015, of the 15 largest school districts, St. Cloud was one of two to more than double their EL student population in 5 years. We currently have 2,466 English learners of 9,700 total students.
I'm sorry, Ms. Frankenfeld, can you repeat? Did you say you doubled your English language learners in 5 years?
More than doubled.
More than. Okay.
We were 973 English learners in 2012, and we are just under 2,500 this year in 2017-18.
Thank you. I want to make sure I heard you correctly. Thank you.
Our English learners represent 32 languages and over 45 countries of origin. Approximately 2,000 of our English learners speak Somali, while Spanish and Anahuac are our next two predominant languages. St. Cloud is increasingly multilingual and multicultural. Actually, for the first time this year, our demographic population, we are now over 50% students of color in St. Cloud Public Schools. East African refugees are our majority population. Is posited by Arrive Ministries, an organization that supports resettlement of newly arrived refugees and immigrants. They have greater numbers of refugees in their pipeline to St. Cloud than they have to the Minneapolis metro area. Subsequently, we are also experiencing increases in our population of students with limited or interrupted formal education. We call them SLIFE. As we refine our process for SLIFE identification, we are better able to distinguish this population from our non-SLIFE English learners. These students with limited prior formal education are oftentimes pre-literate and must be immersed in an emergent reading program. This is a mind shift for junior high and senior high teachers. This is going to require training in both reading and language acquisition strategies. Somali adults are also the majority population in our adult basic education classes. And many of these adult learners are also struggling readers. This is changing the way we do business in our school system. And we see this as an area for collaboration and growth in order to better meet the needs of this particular student population. We have identified family literacy, particularly with our English learner and SLIFE population, as a critical need. Community Somali members and parents have suggested that many of our refugee parents, specifically mothers, are also pre-literate and can benefit from family literacy activities both in school and after school. In response to this, we formed an EL parent core group. Feedback was solicited on the development and implementation of EL programming, and they concurred with the need for both literacy and language support. One way that we stretch our funding sources is to seek support from our community members. Our district is aligned with a community group called Partner for Student Success. Partner for Student Success is a collaborative initiative within the St. Cloud Area School District with a mission to unite the greater St. Cloud community in the collective pursuit of student success. Partner for Student Success is comprised of community partners such as the Eagle Center, Area Universities, CenterCare, Minnesota Serves, Ignite Center, the Workforce Center, Stearns Benton Employment Training Center, across Hands Across the World, the YMCA, Great River Regional Library, they've been awesome, Promise Neighborhood, the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota, La Cruz, and the St. Cloud Area School District. Partners is involved in parent education and training that reaches families with students birth to eighth grade. They have committed to purchasing level texts for use in area gathering spots by our students after school. Volunteers staff after school hours in places like the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Club, and local neighborhood venues like La Cruz. In-kind contributions from our school district will support the volunteers in their use and knowledge of setting reading goals with students, conversation in English, and pre-literacy skills. Additionally, we conducted an internal review of our Title III EL program concurrently with the Minnesota Department of Education external review last fall. A comprehensive analysis of our data illustrated family literacy as a critical need. Along with this, other areas of prioritized concern are training our staff in mental health, specifically in working with students with refugee trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder, implementing culturally responsive teaching practices in regards to our SLIFE and our English learner population, better prepare teachers at all levels to work in diverse classrooms. We have students today at high school and junior high levels that have not had prior opportunities to be in school. And these students are pre-literate. And when you put students like that in a high school class where teachers are not prepared, you know, their answer is, I teach chemistry, I teach language arts, I don't teach pre-emergent literacy. So better preparing them to work collaboratively, extending the school and summer calendar to provide more time in school for SLIFE, viewing multilingualism as an asset, and building a diverse teaching and administration staff, continuing to seek opportunities to partner and learn with community members that benefit all stakeholders, including searching for options for older SLIFE students that come in at ages 17 and 18 with no prior education. Expand our voluntary pre-K through grade 12 co-teaching district vision with embedded coaching and professional development. And lastly, to identify an action plan for math. We have high school math students that are not ready for Algebra 1.1, 1.2, and geometry, so we have to look for plans. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of material out there to address older emergent learners in math. It's hard. So we believe in the can-do philosophy from WIDA that linguistically and culturally diverse learners bring a unique set of assets that enrich the experiences of all learners and educators in St. Cloud area schools. By focusing on what language learners can do, we send a powerful message that students from diverse linguistic, cultural, and experiential backgrounds contribute to the vibrancy of our schools and community. At the end of the day, this additional funding will help us go farther together.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Frankenfield. We appreciate your testimony. And Ms. Barnes, welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tammy Barnes, and again, I'm here as the Willmar School Board member. In Willmar, we have a little over 1,000 of our students who are ELL students out of 4,100 students, so a quarter. A large population of Somali and Hispanic as well as other groups. We looked at our four-year graduation rate for our EL students, not so good. But looking at our five-year, six-year, and seven-year graduation rates, they're doing much better. So they're hanging around. They want to learn. They want to be successful. And so it is our responsibility as a district to do that, and we want to continue to do that and do a wonderful job at that. And we need the funds, just as the previous testifier said. I'm also a retired teacher, and I know that EL students, I worked in Worthington, it takes a lot to help them to adjust coming to a classroom and to school. So that setting is another change that needs to be discussed. All the things that you said are spot on. In Willmar, because of the shortage of substitutes and things, in the previous years we've had those EL teachers are being pulled out to sub for other teachers because we don't have enough subs. So that is a disservice to our students. One other thing that I would love to see is if there was a way to incentivize people to look to be an EL teacher, that would be an awesome addition. But I really also support everything that Carlos, that this bill is doing. I really think it's an important, critical piece, again, for Minnesota as a state economically, and what we as a state and a district have to do is to educate these students. And so I would ask for your support, and I thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Barnes. Any questions for these testifiers? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not really a question, more or less just a comment. When I came in, one of the things that I did during my first interim is visit the schools, and I went to visit Discovery right after they started. And Discovery is one of those schools where it just really blows your mind what they're all doing in that little building. They were packed to the rafters and doing so much work. But what was really curious to me when we talk about English language learners in the area, we're not, of course we're talking about Somali, but every parent-teacher conference at that time, they had to have at least 10 different language interpreters there. And that was kind of like, you're kidding me. I mean, there were a couple of them I would have expected, but not 10. And I know it's even more than that. But also going to Apollo High School and chatting with the principal at the time, he said, you know, some of his biggest challenges were, number one, trying to place a student where they thought this is how old they are, because some of them really don't know how old they are. And then I remember him talking about a young man they put in 10th grade. That's where they figured he should be, had never been to school. So the first week is just showing him how to use a pencil and a paper. And then we're expecting him to graduate in a couple of years. And it's just really difficult to even fathom that. But I just can't help but think what they must think, you know, coming from camps and whatever. And all of a sudden, you know, their biggest problem is learning how to use a pencil and paper. So it really is incredible work that the folks do. And I'm really pleased, Representative Mariani, to see this bill. It is so needed. We have challenges with it, and it's something we need to address to make sure that these kids are getting the education they need. And then sometime we'll hit the fact that they can go to school until they're 20. And after that, they can be very, very close to graduation, a credit or two away, and they're pretty much just out of luck. So we also have to figure out what to do, how to get them across the line and get a degree. Rather than just saying, oops, sorry, you know, it's just really, there's so much to do. So I really appreciate this, and thank you for coming down. It's good to see a friendly face.
Thank you. Would either of the testifiers like to comment? Or I guess I had a question. If you have difficulty, I noticed, you know, there's a growing it's not only growing student population, but also the numbers of language that students are coming to school. And do you have difficulty finding interpreters and speakers who can help you so you are able to communicate with parents and you know, provide that bridge for your EL learners?
Our majority population is Somali. They're not all from Somalia. They're from Ethiopia, Kenya, but they are Somali speakers. So we do have liaisons that speak that language. We have 16 full-time liaisons in our district, as well as a Spanish. For the rest of them, we contract them for conferences and for other, you know, welcome center enrollment processes like that as we need them.
And that would be the same. Thank you, Madam Chair. That would be the same in Wilmer. We have liaisons. We have I don't know the exact number. And we do have a really good pool, but we could always use more. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's
definitely. Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Tice, to the aging out concern you raised, I got a bill for you. but your story about Apollo reminded me of an event I was at one of my middle schools in my district a few years ago, and the then superintendent was there doing a large public gathering, inviting parents to ask questions and the like, and the mom got up to ask the question, and the mom's English was insufficient, so the school district's Spanish-English interpreter provided the interpretation. And the mom's complaint was that her daughter, who was now a freshman in high school, had gone through this middle school, had studied Arabic for 3 years. So remember, the girl is probably native Spanish speaker, learning English, learning Arabic, but the high school she went to doesn't offer Arabic, so now she has to take Chinese. Imagine what an asset that now young woman could be, whether it's to the private sector or here anywhere in the public sector, or imagine her in defense, in the military, imagine her in the diplomatic corps, imagine, you know, anywhere there where she not only has the lived experience of the Latino culture, but has, you know, feet in several other languages. So to the asset that these students can be and the multi-generational impact that this promises. It's great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, a couple of things very quickly, just to speak to Ms. Representative's case observation. I was in Worthington a couple of years ago doing some work with our nonprofit, and I was interacting with a Spanish language interpreter who was Mexican-American. And he said, Carlos, we really need help with translators for Guatemalans. And I looked at him and I said, well, brother, you're a Spanish speaker. What do you mean you need help with? He goes, no, you don't understand. Their primary language is a Mayan indigenous language. These are folks who are working in the hog processing sector. In Worthington, I've been recruited in order to do that. We're a vital part of that local economy and whose kids are in that school. So the communication obviously is with the kids, but it's also with the parents for the sake of parent, you know, being able to be a powerful presence. And it just never occurred to me. I was quite embarrassed as a Latino. I was embarrassed to learn that I wasn't aware that there was a part of our bigger community in which indigenous languages are the first language. And so I think as our world continues to evolve and change, we're going to keep running into those kind of challenges and also opportunities, which then means, to your point, Representative, that we have an opportunity to adjust, you know, how we can continue to exercise good practices in terms of effective communication. Madam Chair, I'm wondering if, you know, I see our superintendent for St. Paul Schools arrived. I wonder if you would be willing to engage a few minutes of him to share?
Absolutely. Superintendent Goddard, if you want to join us at the testifier table, and glad you, I know you had another meeting to be at, and hopefully we had one person who got stuck in the elevator. Hopefully that was not your experience. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Joe Gothard, Superintendent of St. Paul Public Schools, and thank you for hearing House File 3180. that will help reduce the cross-subsidy in English language services for districts and charters with the highest concentrations of English language learners. In St. Paul, English learners are the fastest-growing student population, now over 11,000. They are also often economically disadvantaged, and many also qualify for special education services. One of every three SPPS students are English learners, speaking over 129 languages and dialects. And as you know, SPPS has more EL students than many large districts have students. SPPS has approximately 1,100 newcomer or Language Academy students. Language Academy students are students who have been in U.S. schools for 3 years or less and have an English proficiency score of 2.5 or less. Currently, we are serving 650 students with limited or interrupted formal education, commonly known as SLIFE, approximately 1,500 of who have been enrolled in American schools for more than 6 years and are not progressing toward English proficiency, and who are struggling academically due to their limited English skills. The top 10 languages spoken are Hmong, Spanish, Karen, Somali, Amharic, Oromo, Vietnamese, Nepali, Burmese, and Arabic. Data shows that EL students who have not fully mastered English by high school have only about a 40% chance of completing high school and acquiring a diploma. Being able to communicate basic information in English is not enough to prepare students to meet academic standards in school. EL students must be able to understand a specific and technical vocabulary, comprehend complex academic text, write papers that are structured and coherent, make oral presentations on academic topics, and especially pass examinations that are written in academic English that is often meant to challenge the language skills of native English speakers. So we know what works. Targeted ECFE, birth to three and parents, and voluntary pre-K programs that have prioritized ELL free reduced lunch students, we still have students on the waiting list. Language academies. In 10 elementary and 8 secondary sites, we provide intensive English language through content instruction to level 1 and level 2 students for 40 to 75% of their day. The St. Paul Public Schools English Language Program promotes an inclusion model in which learners acquire English through participation in age-appropriate academic content that is driven by state standards. The teaching of English through academic content requires language instruction that is aligned with and integrated into grade-level curriculum. Students at level 3 or higher may be served through the co-teaching model and or English language development classes in the content areas. These courses are taught by one content licensed teacher and one ESL licensed teacher. The inclusion model ensures that EL students have access to the core curriculum and content standards, and I may also mention that in a co-teaching class in high school, it's the only way students can earn credit-bearing classes in those core subject areas. Our dual language immersion programs help students maintain their first language or learn a new language while they are simultaneously acquire English. Research shows that students in these programs, when they are well implemented, can outperform their peers in English-only programs over time. More EL students are taking college and college in the schools courses and showing success, but they need the right supports. Our Seals of Biliteracy program, the district values and reinforces the language proficiency that speakers of other languages already possess. Currently, the district awards Seals of Biliteracy in Ojibwe, Spanish, Chinese, French, Hmong, Somali, German, Karen, Korean, and Russian. Since 2015, the district awarded approximately 650 students with Seals of Biliteracy. Strong parent and community engagement and parent advisory council groups continually meet to address the needs for students. Offering extended day and summer programs, including Freedom School, which is an enrichment, which offer enrichment opportunities for all of our students, but especially our most needed EL students and students living in impoverished households. We believe these programs and interventions have helped improve EL student performance. However, too many of our English learners are struggling academically, and we need to do more, and our families are rightfully demanding more. Our Minnesota Department of Education audit findings included the following: that services for secondary students in levels 3 and above are not consistent across the district. Our EL staffing resources are limited to adequately serve all eligible ELs across grade level and EL levels. Not enough training for both administrators and content teachers and paraprofessionals. In order to equip all administrators and content teachers with the necessary skills and training, more resources are needed. So here's our challenge. The current EL formula funds only a limited number of ESL teachers who provide supplemental instruction to EL students for a part of the day. However, all educators must have the skills and or the capacity to support English language learners, LEAPS Act, which is part of the LEAPS Act. In addition, there are additional costs for continued communication with students and families for interpreter and translation services, publishing and posting multilingual materials for both our students and families. And we need more. We need more of the following: EL and dual licensed teachers and paraprofessionals with the appropriate training to serve students at all levels, including more literacy and math coaches. Incentives for EL teachers to obtain a content licensure and content teachers to obtain EL licensure. More reading teachers to support emergent and struggling readers at the secondary level. The need for more training for content teachers and administrators. The need for intensive summer school programs focused on EL students, project-based learning, real-life applications, credit recovery, academic content literacy, language support for enrichment. After-school tutorial mentoring programs that support EL students from newcomers to advanced placement and college in the school programs. Between the EL and special education cross-subsidy, which is already over $42 million, they pose significant stress on our budget. And I thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Gothard. We appreciate you sharing that information with us. Representative Mariani, did you have any other testifiers?
Madam Chair, I don't.
Okay.
The superintendent asked me to distribute this. If that's okay, I'll ask them.
Yes, if the page wants to grab those, thank you. All right, so then questions for either Superintendent Gothard or Representative Mariani? Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, Superintendent. And this is primarily, it was good to hear those statistics. And I also want to thank Representative Mariani, not only for this bill, but for your efforts in the last few years to really strengthen this program. Because, members, we've talked a lot kind of education. This is a huge economic issue, huge. And if you look at the demographers, they talk about our workforce. And the growth in our workforce with a lot of the baby boomers retiring now is very small. And a lot of our new workers are going to be our new folks coming into the state. And this will help close the achievement gap. And economists will say as we close the achievement gap, we increase our gross domestic product, increase our growth in our economy. So, and it's statewide. I mean, this is a statewide concern, and so I think our testifiers really kind of make the point of those students that need a targeted, focused approach that we have to make sure we do. Because if they're not reading by, what did you say, 2.5, I mean, they're not going to make it at that. And if they don't make it as a state, we don't make it economically into the future. And so thank you for this bill, and thank you for your efforts, all those working with us, but also Representative Mariani for approaching, because our economic future relies on making sure we close this achievement gap. And the students we're talking about here, that's the key to that. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. I couldn't agree more. Other comments or questions? Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Superintendent, and good to see you, and thank you for taking time. How many language academies do you have in the St. Paul School District?
Yeah, we have...
Superintendent Goddard.
Yep, thank you. We have 10 elementary and 8 secondary sites that serve language academies. So the way we do that, then, is mm-hmm. you know, students are transported to those language academies where intensive services can be provided.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
And how long does that program last? Do they start there and stay there in the program, or is it intermittent?
You know, it's some of each, and Representative Erickson, it depends on where students are, where students live. So they may live in that area already where they choose to attend there, but the Language Academy program is meant to provide intensive supports
yes.
so students can gradually move out.
Yes, and I think that's an excellent idea.
Great, and I think we have... an additional testifier to offer some. Did you want to offer some comments? Please just identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. My name is Zervang, and I am the director of the Office of Multilingual Learning in the St. Paul Public Schools. And this topic, of course, is very near and dear to my heart. I am an immigrant refugee myself, coming here when I was 3 years old. being here for the last 40 years and reaping in the benefits of what public education has brought me. So I'm just very honored to be able to speak on our EL students today. I just wanted to answer that question around our Language Academy students. It is a response to what our requirement of serving our newcomers in the public school system. And we serve them for 2 years at the elementary. And then they do move out of Language Academy intensive support.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was
Representative
great.
Representative Erickson. Thank you, Ms. May. Representative Scott, did you have your hand up?
I did, but I think that was my question.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify how long the funding goes for getting someone up to speed on the language. And so is that a two-year deal then?
Actually, it's longer than that, but I'll let Mr. Strom answer.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, the funding for English learners in Minnesota goes for 7 years if the student qualifies for each of those 7 years. There's a maximum of 7 years of funded service, and districts may provide more services than that to some children through other parts of their budget. There are entrance and exit criteria for the language in order to be considered an English language learner. And so some districts, the students may be performing well enough so that they would be outside of the range of what that English learner is before the 7 years are up. But in terms of the funding, it's available for up to 7 years, but not longer than 7 years.
Representative Scott.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So do we have data on how many are achieving fluency, for lack of a better word, in that 7 years, and how many still aren't where they need to be?
Mr. Strom, I don't know
Madam
if we have
Chair,
statewide data.
Scott, I don't know the answer to that. I'm guessing the individual districts could tell us what their experiences are, but I'm unaware of that.
Thank you. And since we have two representatives from St. Paul Schools, I don't know if you are able to respond to that. And if you heard the question, I guess it was how many students are achieving proficiency or fluency in English within the 7 years, and how many are not. I don't know if you have any statistics for St. Paul Schools.
I do not have the numbers for those who have achieved proficiency. However, we do have about 1,500 students right now in our district who are the long-term ELs, which are the ones that have passed the 7 years and are still receiving certificates.
Thank you. And Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. These are great questions. We deliberated some of these when we passed the Landmark Leaps Act that Representative Marquardt was referencing to a few years ago. What we do know is that it's a more complex answer in terms of when you consider the incredible diversity of students that are classified as EL students. One of the things we did in state statute was recognize one particular part of that, which are SLIFE students. So these are students that come to us not only with not speaking English, but with limited formal instruction. Think of it, as one possibility, living in a isolated camp for a long period of time. That's true of many of our Karenis. Who were a persecuted minority within their big nation and were pushed out and isolated into jungle environments. Certainly true of many of our East African immigrant communities growing up in the turmoils of war with very limited opportunities for any kind of structural education. So that's one group of people within the bigger group of people who all have in common this home native language that's not English. What we do know is generally the literature says that if you have to pin it down to a number, that a range of 5 to 7 years is not an unreasonable expectation on the part of folks like you and I who have to make decisions about resources. It could certainly be less. It could certainly be more, again, depending on the experience of that particular student. So it's pretty challenging. I'm not the expert here in terms of providing the education, but in interacting with my school districts and others, we do know that it's a really challenging scenario, and sometimes actually contributes then to the cross-subsidy issue, as these school districts then feel that they have to make a commitment to a student that may go beyond the 7 year in which they may be eligible under state law.
Representative Scott.
Yeah, one final question, and how long has Minnesota statute said 7 years? Has it been less than that, more than that in the past, or we've just always been around that mark?
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, we've had a couple of different numbers in statute. There's been some big fights about that. It was 5 years for a number of years and was increased, I'm not remembering the year now, but several years ago back to seven.
Okay.
But 13? Yeah, so 13, 14. Mr. Withers informs me was the year that it was increased back. So it's been at a couple of different levels over the years, but generally in that 5 to 7 range.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Morani, I think you had your hand up as well, and I think that was your bill, the LEAPS Act, was it not?
Yes. Oh, yes. Mr. Straub and Mr. Withers were both part of the staff team that helped shepherd that through.
Thank you. Other questions? All right. Not seeing any. I have one question, and thank you, Representative, everyone's representative today. I don't know. I got it on the brain. Superintendent Gothard, you came and visited me about this topic, and I appreciate that very much. And one of the things I asked you about was resources for summer academies for students, and you mentioned your Freedom Schools, which I think is what you call them. And could you tell us a little bit more about that? And I'm wondering, is that student obviously voluntary attendance by students, or is it opportunities for students who want to continue working on their language, or is it students who are maybe behind or need to do some work on their language? How does that work, and what kind of participation are you getting, and how can we encourage more of that? Because I am a big believer if we can utilize some of that time over the summer to help students, you know, keep working on these skills, that would be helpful to our goals as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Freedom Schools is one school that we run in two sites, the Children's Defense Fund sponsors it, and it's a long-standing program in St. Paul and has been really successful. We also have the Hmong and Karen Power Academy at Jackson School. So there are a number of programs that we run both outside of school time and in the summer, all aimed at trying to provide skills and supports for students and families that are above and beyond what we can do during the day. So I think the Freedom Schools is just one example, but any support that we can have to continue and expand programming or be creative and unique in what we're doing is what our students need.
All right, thank you. Other questions? All right, not seeing any. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Thank you for the opportunity to have an extended conversation on this. I appreciate that, and I think hopefully it's been an enriching experience for all of us. You know, the cross-subsidy issue in EL is a very real issue. We've actually made some headways of that with the passage of the LEAPS Act and the subsequent action the year later when we moved back the 7 years. So that certainly helped school districts across the state, but didn't fully answer that question. What we know from MDE data sources is that we're looking at a $14 million cross-subsidy just in greater Minnesota alone, with a total cross-subsidy nearly over $90 million. In some of our school districts, you know, like St. Cloud, Burnsville, you know, those are fast approaching $2 million a year in cross-subsidies. In St. Paul, with such a big population, it's a really big cross-subsidy. I think we're pushing right around $18 million. So anything that we can do would certainly be helpful. This bill seeks to generate a little north of $7 million by tweaking that concentration element of the formula. Again, just as with the prior bill, you know, any action on our part obviously is going to be largely dictated by this committee's ability to have a target within which it can work effectively. And, of course, we know we're also competing with lots of other good issues in front of us. I think as long as we stay focused on this issue, understand its importance, understand the importance of this community to the well-being of our state, that we can hopefully keep taking the steps forward to cut into that cross-subsidy. Greatly help our schools and obviously greatly help our student population. So I appreciate, look forward to working with you and the committee as we wrestle with those bigger issues that we're going to deal with our finance bill this year.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Mariani. And with that, Representative Mariani renews his motion that House file, make sure I get the right bill, 3180 be re-referred to Ways and Means with the Chair's intention to lay over for possible inclusion or further action at a later time. And with that, we have completed our bills for today. So thank you very much to the committee. We are adjourned.